from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The city of Richmond released a draft on an environmental impact report for Chevron's billion-dollar modernization project, which some are calling an expansion project, at the 110-year-old refinery, which, by the way, is the largest refinery in the state of California. The hearing for public comments on the draft is slated for tomorrow, and we want to focus on it in this Forum half hour. Let you know who is with us for the hour. Andres Soto is here in studio. He's a member of the Richmond Organizer, Richmond Organization for Communities for a Better Environment. Welcome.
Thank you.
And by the way, it may be the largest refinery in Northern California. I said all of the state.
It's the largest one in California.
I think it is in the whole state. Yeah.
Largest greenhouse gas emitter.
Nicole Barber is also with us. She is a spokesperson for Chevron in Richmond, and she joins us from Richmond. Nicole Barber, welcome.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. And let me begin with you. This is going to be cleaner and safer, according to all the edicts that have come out from Richmond and from Chevron, and meeting the technology standards and air quality. And, you know, I've read all of this, but, you know, there's still concern about pollution. And the concern is real, especially with respect to diseases and all. Let me have you address that right away.
Great. First of all, I'd like to say thanks for inviting me to participate in the forum this morning. We've made a commitment to being transparent and sharing information with the public about the modernization project, and this forum gives us an excellent opportunity to talk about what the project is and what it isn't. You specifically asked a question about emissions, and I want to start off by saying that that this billion-dollar investment in the facility replaces some of the oldest processing equipment with more modern technology, and this allows us to operate the refinery in a way that is safer and meets the toughest air quality standards in the nation. Our commitment that is outlined in the environmental impact report, including ways demonstration of ways that we're going to mitigate emissions, is to no net increase in greenhouse gas emissions, in criteria air pollutants, and in health risks.
No net increase, but Andres Soto, that doesn't exactly make a smile come to your face. Huh?
No, because first of all, we have to talk about what is the baseline. And they're discussing a baseline of 2010, which was a baseline. If we just look at the emissions for 2010, we know that this was already dangerous, already harming people in Richmond and in the region. And we also know that this was during a period of time when Chevron was deliberately evading monitoring equipment within the refinery that ultimately got them fined by the Air District. And it was also when they were running the refinery into the ground, producing tremendous emissions and dangerous conditions, running higher sulfur content crude that ultimately led to the failure of the pipe that exploded on August 6, 2012 and sent a massive mushroom cloud over Richmond on Hiroshima Day.
In fact, this is a thinner version of the original report that was stopped by a lawsuit, we should add, a few years ago after August 12, after the fire. And there's a job, Nicole Barber.
Well, no, there's two separate lawsuits. The lawsuit that stopped the project was filed by CBE and APEN after the approval of the prior project. Right. And then subsequent to the fire, the city of Richmond has separately sued Chevron.
Yeah, in fact, I guess that gets to the question of trust here. I'm going to hear public comments starting tomorrow. But Nicole Barber, Chevron has frankly not been entirely truthful. I mean, that's part of the history. And some of this lack of trust is understandable. I know there's a big campaign now. You got billboards and TV ads and a community website which has Chevron Speaks page. I'm not sure about that as far as journalism, but let me get you on record here just in terms of trying to perhaps speak to the concern about trust.
Thanks for that question. I want to start off by saying that with respect to this environmental impact report, Chevron isn't asking the community to trust us. The environmental impact report was developed by the city of Richmond with some of the best consultants and experts on CEQA issues and on environmental impacts in California. And so that environmental impact report and the city's consultants have done a very thorough job at documenting what the impacts of the project are to the community. With respect to the Richmond Proud campaign, which I believe you referenced, the billboards, I mentioned that we're committed to transparency and sharing information about what the project is and what it isn't. And the Richmond Proud campaign gives us a forum to do that. It's about talking about what's good about Richmond, what people are doing in Richmond that make it a great place to live and to work, and what features about within the city are good and great. And with respect to our role in that, the modernization project is a great representation. An investment in the facility is one thing that Chevron can do to make this great city even greater.
Well, let me also ask you to address what Andre Soto said about, I mean, I know the plan will not boost solution, including greenhouse gas emissions. That's pretty clear. But what about just maintaining a baseline here, or as opposed to really cutting and cutting it in ways that, again, would ensure people that Chevron had the community's best interest at heart?
Right. So the baseline in the environmental impact report is based on operational data from the facility between 2008 and 2010. The environmental impact report takes that baseline and it analyzes it against some operating scenarios that could play out as a result of the project. The City of Richmond selected two very aggressive operating scenarios, and they did that to encourage us to demonstrate how emissions will be mitigated. So in the baseline period, our operations were at about 89% utilization. The environmental impact report analyzes utilization rates of 93%, which represents the highest utilization of any refinery on the West Coast for a given year, and 100% utilization. And in the EIR, we demonstrate in those very aggressive operating scenarios how we're going to reduce emissions down to the baseline. That being said, we anticipate that our actual operations post-project will be more similar to the 89% utilization, which will result in an emissions decrease.
Andre Soto, I know you're concerned about the process of crude high with the sulfur content. I mean, that is a big concern too here, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, in this EIR, what we understand right now, and certainly this has been the densest EIR that's been produced. It's around 1,143 pages and over 3,500 pages of appendices. You know, it's in three massive volumes. But when you sift through all of that noise, what you come down to is they want to essentially double the sulfur content of the crude that they intend on processing in the refinery. We know that it was increasing sulfur content crude that led to the corrosion that created the fire. This project is actually a scaled back of the hydrogen renewal project they proposed in 2008. And in fact, they plan on replacing less of the equipment than they did. Only about 20% of the refinery will get made over. And, you know, so for them to call it modernization is once again an untrustworthy misnomer. And when we're looking at what they're actually talking about replacing, it's mostly in the crude units, like the one that blew up in August 6th. And what we've seen is they are intending on using 9-chrome steel, which, you know, is fine. It's better than the carbon steel, but the Chemical Safety Board suggested they use stainless steel. And they failed to address anything about converting over to a different source of energy, nothing about solar energy in this thing. The community has been asking for years at least some of the generation of the energy in the refinery go towards solarization, along with a community benefit to the people in the frontline communities who will get some solar energy benefits to help turn the city around. And their mitigation for greenhouse gases depends upon cap and trade. So they're going to pay into a fund that will allow them to actually exceed those emissions locally here in Richmond. And they're not even talking about the other 76 items or materials such as the volatile organic compounds and the fine particulate matter that is going to increase as a result of this process.
Well, we'll get a response from Nicole Barber, but first I want to give out the phone number, because we're talking about Chevron's hopes to revamp the Richmond refinery, expand it, modernize it, choose your word here. They're going to begin a $1 billion construction project. This could actually be approved as early as June by the city council, although there's going to be public comment. It could be up and running perhaps in a couple years. If you have something you'd like to add to this conversation or just join the conversation, if you have a question or comment, you can do that now. Toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, but please feel free to join the program, and we'll try to get you on here. I want to go back first to Nicole Barber, though, to get her to respond to, well, what you heard from Andre Soto, and then I want to also talk about jobs. Nicole Barber.
Okay, great. Thank you. Just a couple of things. I think with respect to the increase in sulfur, we've been very transparent about that. In fact, one of the project objectives is to increase flexibility and allow us to process crude oil with more sulfur in it. We knew when we started down the path of this project after the incident in August of 2012 that we had a lot to do in this community to rebuild trust. And it's for that reason that the City of Richmond's expert consultant on safety did a reliability review of the entire facility, looking at if we bring in materials with higher sulfur, where in the refinery would that additional sulfur touch, and are the systems and protocols and components adequate to handle that increased sulfur in a way that does not increase any risk to our workforce and risk to the public. The result of that extensive reliability review conducted by the City of Richmond was several recommendations which are outlined in the public safety chapter of the Environmental Impact Report. And I want to talk about a couple of them because I think they're very relevant to the points that Andres made.
Before you do that, could you address why there was nothing about solar, which Andres Soto also pointed out?
In terms of solar energy, the Environmental Impact Report in Chapter 6 also analyzes alternative scenarios to the project. One of those scenarios is installing a significant amount of solar energy to power the refinery and mitigate greenhouse gases. And the Environmental Impact Report ultimately finds, through the analysis of several alternatives, that the project case is actually the superior environmental alternative. So the project case is better for the environment than any alternative considered by the City of Richmond's EIR.
And
so the solar use of solar at the refinery and to mitigate greenhouse gases was analyzed in Chapter 6 within the Environmental Impact
Report. The reality is
now
that
I'd like to talk, if I can,
yeah, go ahead.
Continue on the safety side. So I mentioned that the reliability review occurred, and the city's expert consultant made several recommendations, all of which have been we've committed to incorporating. And among them are replacement of about 17 piping circuits with materials that have greater resistance to corrosion. That's in the project area and outside of it, like around the crude unit. In addition to that, we've committed to more government oversight, more and enhanced inspections, and then annual reporting to the workforce, annual reporting to the city and to the county. We've agreed to fund an expert that the county or the City of Richmond can select that will review those reports, interpret them, and advise the city and the county on our performance against commitments. And then we also committed to hosting annual town halls with our workforce and with the community to demonstrate how we're living up to the commitments that were made in the Environmental Impact Report.
All right, I want to go to our calls, but I just want to get you on record on something else, if I could, Nicole Barber, and that is there's been a promise of a priority for Richmond residents to get jobs, the estimate of about 1,000 construction jobs. This is a non-binding labor agreement, but again, what about the sense of completely relying upon what Chevron is putting out here about more jobs and more jobs for people in Richmond?
I'd like to answer that in two ways. First, the Environmental Impact Report does include information about jobs associated with the project. And you're right, there are about 1,000 new local construction jobs and 29 permanent jobs that will be the result of the project. That was analyzed in the Environmental Impact Report. Additionally, Beacon Economics did a study about the impact of the project, specifically around kind of the construction activity. And Beacon Economics found that an additional 1,300 jobs, indirect jobs, would be created locally. That would be in Richmond and West Contra Costa County in support of the construction activities and other indirect jobs, and a result of about $200 million in economic activity. So that's one piece of it. The other piece of kind of the jobs equation is that Chevron and the building trade unions and the city of Richmond signed a local content agreement where we all made commitments to prioritize local hiring as well as local suppliers. And kind of in the spirit of, you know, demonstrating transparency, we agreed to hire a jobs coordinator and will report to the city and to the public about our performance for hiring locally.
All right, Andres Soto, I want to get your response on that because I know you've been skeptical about jobs. I want to get to our callers here. So where
Well, I mean, this all sounds well and good, you know, but primarily most of the building trades guys don't live in Richmond. You know, the primarily it's the laborers union within the range of building trades that actually are African American and Latinos that work in and live in Richmond. But historically, you know, Chevron only hires about 5 to 7% of their entire workforce from Richmond residents. This doesn't change that. Even if they got, you know, 25%, which is a goal of the local hires of those 29 new positions, that's great for those people, but that's not really going to address the broader issue of structural unemployment within the Richmond community. And we also see that these 1,000 construction jobs come in phases. It's not like there's going to be 1,000 guys out there working at one time. Different sections are built at different times using different skill sets and different trade unions. And, you know, I'd also like to respond to this whole issue about trust. You know, with this billboard campaign where they are literally buying up all the public spaces, this is really a significant way to inhibit both commercial and political free speech. We're going into an election year, and we know that by them preemptively buying up all these billboards, big and small, all around town with their propaganda, this Richmond
Proud campaign.
They have
a right to advertise and buy billboards?
Yeah, but at the point to stifling anybody else's commercial free speech rights, no other business can buy these billboards and advertise their products, and certainly no candidate is not supported by Chevron will have access to even buy those billboards once they raise the money. So this is a preemptive attack, just like they spent $1.2 million in the last election in 2012 in Richmond to support their candidates and defeat, you know, those who are challenging Chevron, the progressive community out there. And we think this is really a very heavy-handed way of dealing with the Richmond community that shows complete disrespect, that they have to go out and buy favor in the community and spread cash around, co-opting people as a way to get their project through. But, you know, fortunately, we have things like the California Environmental Quality Act that we can use as a template to hold them accountable.
All right. We're going to bring our listeners in. And, Max, we go to you first. Welcome.
Hi there. So, you know, oil production throughout the United States is up pretty significantly as a result of the fracking boom. And I was wondering if, you know, the callers can comment on the kind of broader implications of that and how this relates to that. I mean, is the local environmental story a lesser or greater evil than kind of the broader geopolitical and economic implications of expanded refining and the U.S., you know, being on track to become a net energy exporter?
Well, okay. We're talking about bigger global picture. Andres Soto, want to come
Yeah, well, we know that Chevron is a significant investor in a pipeline to bring tar sands to the West Coast. Once they get that built, then we can expect that they're going to be bringing tar sands to refineries all up and down the West Coast, Washington, Oregon, California. This apparently, but we don't know for sure, is not a crude by rail project, but Bakken crude is currently coming into the Bay Area. In fact, CBE, Communities for a Better Environment, has sued, along with Natural Resources Defense Council, Sierra Club, and APEN, the Air District, as well as Kinder Morgan, for bringing this in without a public review for their permit at the rail yard in Richmond. So there's going to be a hearing Monday the 28th in Superior Court in San Francisco dealing with that issue as well.
You want to comment, Nicole Barber?
Absolutely. Thank you. Just to kind of reiterate, one of the things that Andres just said is that this is not a crude by rail project. In fact, in the environmental impact report, in the environmental introduction, which is Chapter 4, the environmental impact report clearly documents that Chevron during the baseline period did not bring in crude by rail into the refinery, and this modernization project environmental impact report does not contemplate crude by rail being brought into the facility, as infrastructure enhancements would be, need to be made in order to do so. So that's not part of this project.
But with what respect about the tar sands?
With respect to the tar sands and heavy crude, I want to point you in the direction of the project description, which is Chapter 3, specifically page 3-7. It talks about the gravity of crude that we typically process here at the Richmond Refinery during the baseline period. And it also discusses the likelihood of a processing heavier crude as a result of the project. And the reason that this is not a heavy crude project is because the Richmond Refinery produces all of the base oils for the West Coast. In fact, it's the only facility that has a base oil plant. So when you need to get your oil changed in your car, chances are the oil that they're putting in comes from the Richmond Refinery. To fully utilize that equipment, we need to process intermediate crudes, light end of intermediate crudes. And ultimately, what this EIR shows in the project description and elsewhere is that a shift in crude, crude density, crude heaviness isn't likely. In addition to that, we've made a commitment in the environmental impact report, and you can read this in Chapter 3 as well.
By the way, is the report available for listeners online?
Absolutely.
The EIR, how can they get it?
They can log on to the city's website, which is chevronmodernization.com,
okay.
And they can download the report as a whole or chapter by chapter. So the other piece of the environmental impact report in Chapter 3 that addresses this issue of heavy crude is we do have a piece of equipment in the refinery that allows us to process the heavier parts of the crude oil that comes in. And that that piece of equipment is called a solvent de-asphalter. And in the environmental impact report, we actually make the commitment to reduce our Title V permit limit for that solvent de-asphalter as an in-good-faith demonstration that this project is not about heavy crude.
All right, I want to get more callers on here. We'll go to Palo Alto next. Eric, you're on forum. Good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on the no net increase as a criterion and what that actually means from an engineering point of view. When you do a project like this, you trade off various benefits that are available to various parties. So you can become more efficient, you can process heavier or lighter or different things, you build different outputs. What no net increase means is that if you look at the 100 years of technology that this is covering, all the benefits accrue to Chevron and none are being given to the community. So that you're taking 100 years of technology and you're saying, well, we're going to get all the benefits and we're not going to use this efficiency to decrease pollution, we're going to use it to increase our bottom line.
Nicole Barber.
For that question, I do want to correct a couple of statements there. Environmental regulations have evolved over time, and they have resulted through regulations and through voluntary commitments in an 87% reduction in air emissions since the 1970s. And the modernization project is really the next step on that journey. It will further reduce emissions from the facility. So that's kind of one piece.
That's not the truth,
with,
though.
with respect to the no net increase, many of the emissions from the refinery will be mitigated locally within the refinery. So that's a lot of the criteria air pollutants, like the nitrogen oxides, like particulate matter, and like SO2. A lot of those constituents will be mitigated locally, which is a net benefit to this community.
Andres Soto.
Yeah, that's just simply not true. The reality is that when they're talking about no net increases with 2010 baseline, this will be measured over the course of a year. So it's like no net increases on a year-by-year basis. And what that means is they can have incredible spikes as well as valleys as long as it all balances out over the course of a year. And when they engage in those spikes, what happens is we, the people in Richmond and San Pablo and West County and the whole refinery corridor, are the ones who have to suffer while they just pay into a greenhouse gas fund that's going to fund high-speed rail. And that doesn't, and it's a complete misrepresentation about the fine particulate matter and the volatile organic compounds, of which 76 of them are actually going to increase under the scenarios presented in this EIR. And let's let's be frank and real, that the only reason Chevron is even revealing its sulfur content now is because of the lawsuit brought against Chevron related to their project back in 2008 by Communities for a Better Environment and APIN to cause them to have to tell the truth about what they're really intending to do there.
Let me read some listener comments that are coming in online and by emails. A listener writes online, for years, environmental activists and other local agitators have demanded that the Chevron refinery reduce pollution, hire more minorities, scale back production of fossil fuels, and pay more property taxes. I don't see how all these objectives can be achieved simultaneously. Micah sends the following email. If I'm not mistaken, one of yesterday's topics touched on the need for a transformation of our national power and utility infrastructure. Today, the conversation turns to Chevron's proposed expansion of what appears to be a problematic facility. Chevron, as a corporate entity, will always, first and foremost, be concerned with profits, as any logical corporation would. The only viable solution, as far as I can see, is a reduction of the need for the fossil fuel in question and the beginning of that transition to sustainable sources. Chevron, in and of themselves, is a small part of a larger issue at play. And a listener tweets, Chevron does not seem to be holding themselves to a higher standard. Seems like the opposite. They want to meet regulations at most. Lance writes, if this project gets its approval, and it sounds like from the mayor there's a political will to make it happen, what kind of oversight process, if any, is going to keep this refinery in line for safety and pollution regulations? I truly hope there isn't a repeat event at this facility if the project is approved. Ben writes, what's the difference if Chevron's willing to write on paper about limits on emissions when they have shown time and again that they are willing to break the rules? Some propaganda about how great Richmond is, which probably costs $1 to $2 million at most, does not change the fact that Chevron is willing to break the rules when they know they will make billions. And so the comments go. We would that we had more time, but there's a quick question here for you, Nicole Barber. A listener says, I want to hear more about why you're not using solar. You said, according to this listener, solar wasn't the best for the environment, but never explained why. Isn't Mrs. Barber, instead, Ms. Barber changed the subject entirely. Enlighten me. Why is solar not good for the environment? We got seconds left here.
Okay, great. That's a great question. Thank you. The specific question that I answered was powering the refinery with solar as an alternative to using electricity from that we generate here on site. Solar is a perfectly reasonable and a great source of energy for a lot of uses. And the Environmental Impact Report actually talks about some initiatives that solar energy could actually be deployed. Chevron will be funding $30 million over 10 years. That's $3 million a year for 10 years to invest in greenhouse gas mitigations and renewable energy.
We'll have to end it there. You can find more information, by the way, about the project at our website, kqed.org/forum. And click on this segment. Thanks, Nicole Barber, spokesperson for Chevron in Richmond. Thanks, Andre Soto, member of the Richmond Organization for Communities for a Better Environment. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.